to Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, hello. It's a brand new day dawning on the world of 40K this morning.
In fact, the world. We are the Butler Assholes podcast. We are recording after the preview. This is, you know, we've had some time to kind of have it sink into us. This was a big Warhammer 40,000 preview we got from Games Workshop today.
Biggest one we've had in quite a while, by my estimation. Like, that's possibly the biggest one we've had in since the release of the last edition. I mean, because we did, that's what we got. We got a new edition announced.
Well, it was all Warhammer 40K. I mean, that's the other previews we have had other things sprinkled in with it, but this was all Warhammer 40,000 all day, all the time. Before we get in on that, though, I want to talk to you guys about a buddy of mine who has just opened up his web store. He has a game store. He's in Tennessee. But he's moved some of his business online because of, you know, what's all happening in the world right now. He's been in an
absolute necessity,
particularly affected. And the website is grandadventurecomics.com. I'm going to put a link in the show notes, but that's grandadventurescomics.com. The guy that runs this is, he's my man. You know, it's like we travel around. He's one of the folks that travels around with me. We go to conventions. We go to places that, we hang out outside of Warhammer stuff. He's just a real good guy, stand-up member of the community. One of the brains behind the ATC tournament here in the United States. You know, check out his shop. Even if you can, you're planning on it, stick with your normal shops. You know, support your local game store, support your online store, support our sponsors. You know, that's very important. But if you're getting two things and you can get one thing from this place, please do. It means a lot to me. I know it would mean certainly a lot to him. And thanks for giving a go and checking out his site.
And I'd like to put in the caveat, with things hopefully starting to calm down in the next month or two, it's going to be really important for people to get out there and start putting some money into their store, into their local stores. Start that army you've wanted to start for a while. I mean, I'm not telling you to go crazy and, buy $1,000 straight off the bat, because most of us don't have that to spare, unfortunately, at the moment. But whatever you can give to keep the hobby going, to keep our stores and our local scene thriving and hopefully growing eventually again, please do. I think it's really important.
Yeah, thanks for saying that. And I don't think people should spend just to spend, right? It's not, if it makes sense, if you can do it, if you have, the budget to do it, then please continue to do it, because some of these places, they need that kind of flow of the economy to still work. So they are there for us on the other side. But again, it's a choice, right? Everything's a choice, but even now you have to be a little bit more careful with it. And I'm, certainly sensitive to that with folks. Just wanted to, with anything that we mentioned on the show, I just kind of want to shine a light on good people doing good things. And this is definitely one of those. And, when you are purchasing from the folks that we mentioned or represent on the show, they're, the people that either we know or believe in or whatever. And this is doubly true with this web store. So please give it a look if you can.
Yeah, absolutely right.
And I want to talk about one more website.
What would that one be?
ForgeTheNarrative.net. ForgeTheNarrative.net has had a complete overhaul and it looks amazing.
So a new website for the new age.
That's it. I guess it's the second edition of the website to help talk about. Ninth edition,
man, it looks 40K. It looks fantastic. I'm a big fan.
It really does. So Josh Diffie from Best Coast Pairings and Down Under Pairings, and your man,
the wizard himself. The guy is just a dude who gets stuff done.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're walking through the process now. I mean, I picked out what I wanted it to look like, but I just kind of like said things, right? And then he goes off and performs this sorcery that makes it look exactly like I asked for. I mean, it's very clean. I think it looks pretty slick. There's a way on the site, you're going to get easier access to listen to the podcast. If that's how you go, if you do go to the site and listen to it that way, it'll be easier to do it. But there's also, we added, it's a Spotify playlist for Hobby Time. And right now it's just FTN episodes, but I think I'll start to update this with things like either, music that I listen to or other podcasts that I listen to to fill it. You could basically, I'm going to kind of curate a playlist over time on this thing, you know, and have 10 or so things worth, you know, for you to sit down and whatever, if you want to consume it that way, or just want to hear what I'm listening to. The show, you know, our show, very family friendly. I can't promise that the music and that kind of stuff, if it gets added there, will be completely family friendly. So, just a little caveat on that kind of stuff, but no, yeah. Anyways, neat. Check it out. The website is awesome. It really does have just a slick look to it. And I think you'll like it if you haven't gone there and checked it out in the past. That is forgethenarrative.net.
Nice.
I know it's a lot of placement and stuff at the beginning of the show. We're going to talk about largely, you know, our impression of the reveal today. And man, this reveal, I mean, there's going to be stuff that comes about with a new edition, right? But really the enthusiasm seems to be pretty high for this. We had a logo change. This is the first Warhammer 40,000 logo change we've had since, I believe, third edition.
Yeah. Who pointed that out? The gentleman joined us on the live stream last night. I can't remember his name.
Will. It's Will. Will Bundy. Yep.
Yeah, Will. He went and got out all his old rule books going back to second edition, and he was able to show us, here's exactly where it changed, guys. And man, yeah, you're right. It's been a very long time since we had a logo change for 40K. Now, it is noted that the Games Workshop logo changed to be the hammer with the eagle and stuff on it. Changed. How long ago was that? I think that was
that two years?
Was that with the new edition? Two or 3 years? Yeah. Couldn't be longer than that. Yeah.
Mm. Could be, yeah. So, yeah.
It's probably due. Probably yeah. Very due. You know?
So yeah. with the figures that we saw, you know, so they launched a new website. We got to see some figures being spoiled on the during the teasers, but then with the pictures on the website, we got to see even, you know, what if you break out your magnifying glass, you get to see even more new figures. And it looks, I mean, if what we've seen from the Necrons and the Space Marines is a starter set, it's like if the two like the collection of models that we see are a starter set, that's going to be a really super impressive starter set. Now, I don't know, but this looks like it's pretty giant as far as the figures that you're going to get in that set. If it is one.
Absolutely.
Again, we don't know. I don't know, but
absolutely.
It just seems like it.
I would agree with that 100%. Looks huge, man. Are you relating to some pictures we've seen trickling in and out of the place? Because I'm not quite sure if those are leaks or if they're been released by JW.
Because
so much...
Warhammer 40,000 like site, and you click on the factions and stuff, you'll see more pictures of models. And if you have to, I guess, click through or in around the site, and you'll see some Easter eggs from what are going to be new models. I mean, the Army models, right?
And a lot of those, you're talking about these pictures are being cleaned up. So now we're getting some good looks at what this new stuff is. Now the picture of the Necron stuff that you're talking about, there is a lot in that picture. I'm not sure it's believable that could possibly be all in one starter set. I think that's I wish that was true.
You're probably right. I mean, again, I'm being optimistic and a little bit of wishful thinking. I said, but if you know, I don't know it isn't. I don't know that it is. But there's a lot of things there. I did not expect. Now, we have often, like, it's even been a topic of things that we've brought up recently about how just kind of sparse the like Necron and Death Guard line is. And
well, yeah, so between Necrons and Thousand Sons, those are the two armies with the least amount of models in their range. So yeah, them getting new stuff, I think, can never be a bad thing.
And not just a little bit of stuff, a lot of stuff.
A legit amount of stuff. Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. I mean, I guess maybe setting them up to be the new big bad guys. And we heard about a line, you know, of novels coming out that are going into this, you know, advancing the story, going into this next age. And I think that the title of that is Avenging Sun. It's got Gilliman on the title. And
yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought they would, like, start this with a story about Ultramarines? Like, hold the phone, be still my beating heart. I did not see this coming, Paul. I'm shocked.
Yeah, and for those of us that our loyalties lie with other chapters, you know, you do get tired. Yes, I get it. Yes, you blue armor, you're awesome. Yes, everyone loves you. And but that title, Avenging Sun, you know, what's going on is does something happen to the Emperor? You know, I don't know that we know.
Well, so Gilliman's been called the Avenging Sun for a long time, hasn't he? I actually, someone in the chat can probably, or in the in the comments can probably correct me if I'm going to get this wrong. But I believe he's been called Avenging Sun for, was it during the Scouring or was it after the Horus Heresy when he was rebuilding? Maybe, essentially, he took a seat on the council. That's my recollection. That could be wrong. I'm sure somebody will set me right there. But yeah, he's been called Avenging Sun for a while still.
Yeah,
I just know I've heard that moniker a long time before this novel.
Okay. Well, fair enough. You know, maybe again, I'm just thinking that I don't know if there's anything that's, you know, so sacred anymore that it can't be touched. I think that they're willing to kind of mix it up. And, you know, again, the new models, greatly looking forward to them. Close combat intercessors.
Yes. I'm a fan. I think the models look incredible. I think it was only a matter of time before they did this. I will echo what happened in the chat on the Twitch live stream. Where are the jump packs? These boys are doing no good to me if they're walking across the table.
Do you need jump packs when you have an impulsor?
I was about to say, like, probably not, but I want them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we may see them, you know, who knows? I do think these guys are, you know, when you add in Shock Assault, what are we going to be swinging? Like 5 attacks a piece off of?
5 each. Yeah. 6 on the Sarge. Like, is that what we're going to get with these guys?
That sounds pretty good.
So if it sounds unnecessary to me.
It sounds like they're going to be Blood Angels real quick is what I'm thinking. That's, cannot wait. All right. So one of the benefits though, one of the things they did during this hour is, what was an hour and a half long preview or whatever, is give us 9 things we needed to know about this edition.
Yeah, man. And some of them are very, very exciting. So I've actually written these down. I've got them ready for us to roll. If you want to take them from the top, or you want to hit my highlights or your highlights?
Let's just go down one at a time. Yeah.
First one, refined rules. I'm assuming like that means that some of the stuff is less clunky. Like there are some, I said this before, but I want the morale phase to be overhauled. I think it's an irrelevant phase in the game, and I want it to mean something again. On top of that, maybe they've done some things like cleaned up some of the negative mechanics. People got some feel bad moments with the wrapping and not being able to wrap and things like that.
Wrapping and heroic intervention is always been
I
mean, it's a cool rule, but it's there's basically a little bit clunky. Also, kind of creates feel bad sometimes.
Yeah, it's really kind of awkward. When you're trying to figure out, oh, can I do this? Can I do that? If he's got a jump pack, does he get to jump over models when he heroic intervenes? Can he do this? Can he do that? Blah, blah, blah. Especially when you change that to heroic intervening 6 inches instead of, you know, whatnot. And so, yeah, I would like, that's another one, a good point that I would like to see that cleaned up as well. What else? I mean, a lot of people have been talking about the possibility of alternating activations. I'm not quite sure how I feel about that.
Well, I mean, we're speculating and wishlisting at this point. We're not talking about anything that is a definite. I think we're just talking about what does the overhaul of a rule mean, or of the rules mean. And it was neat. I got to spend some time talking with one of the lead designers during 8th edition, and you know, he said, look, it wasn't like an instance of, well, once we started trimming the rules down, that we had some directive to get to a certain amount of pages. Like, it wasn't like, well, I can name that tune in 10 pages. You know, well, I could do it in 7. That's not, that was never it. They just wanted it to be clear and concise and have a lot of the complexity of the game come from the codexes. So I think that we can probably expect the next version of that is, what I want to see, and this is something I've been pushing forever, is like the word that the move needs to be capital M. You know, when we're talking about the rules mechanic, it needs to have a capital letter.
An
attack
a more consistency.
Needs a capital letter attack. Yeah. So you know that there is a, when you see that with that capital letter, that you know exactly how it behaves and how it interacts. And that's, I think that could be the next phase in refinement of the rules.
Yeah, very true. Because there are so many, I don't know, there's too much open to interpretation. I think there's a lot of times, and I've been in far too many arguments with players. It's a bit harsh to say arguments. So many rules discussions across the game table during a pivotal time of the game where someone thinks and legitimately thinks something is a different way than it is. Now, admittedly, this did happen a lot earlier in the piece before all the FAQs started rolling out and GW started having an active hand in
heavily
writing some of these things.
yeah, documented rule set right now, and it's great. I mean, it's a you know, a bit of a blessing and a curse. You have to have all that information available to you to have the tightest game possible, but it is at least accessible.
And yeah, and dude, it's clunky. You need so many. You need an absolute encyclopedia of documents to play a game now. And I hopefully that is what they – hopefully that's the biggest thing that changes in this next edition. The rules stay as like one document, and they continue for a whole couple of years as one document. Maybe Codex is changing or supplements being inserted in and out. But constantly needing a chapter approved, 3 or 4 FAQs, a designer's notes, a specialist, a Vigilus Ablazed, a Psychic Awakening, and a Codex to play one army, and then a rule book. Like, oof. Yeah, let's not do that again. And they told us they weren't going to do that again to us. They told us after 7th edition they weren't going to do that to us. And unfortunately, it actually got a little bit worse. So hopefully that is something that they address.
Well, I mean, one of the things they just came right out of the gate said you're still going to be able to use the codexes that exist now. So everything that's a book and playable now will be functional in some way in the new design.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that means that all the FAQs are the same, though. It might just be the codexes, and then they function in a different way in the different rule set, and you don't need those FAQs anymore. You know, I don't know. We don't know, but I think that would be something that would be cool.
Yeah, I agree. Next one is our Crusade system. Now, this is looks like it's a new system they're employing for, I guess, the promotion and the growth of more narrative-based formats. So this would be, you know, they got the 3 ways to play. This is like the next version or the stepping stone up from narrative play. But it sounds exciting because they're talking about game tracking. They're talking about, like, as your army grows and as you play more games, you get like battlefield experience and you gain battle honors and, you know, injuries or whatnot. So
yeah,
I'm guessing this
persistent
is
persistent stuff with your army. And I think this is something that has always kind of sounded good, right? Like we've wanted to do this, but there hasn't been an easy way to track it. And maybe this is something in that app that we're going to talk about a little bit. But
yeah, well, that was my first assumption, because one of the things I said about the app was that you're going to be able to build army lists in it, and so you could lock your army list into like a certain format, like a Crusade format army list. And then, you know, when you track games and whatnot, and, you know, you put in, oh, did you win or you lose, who died, who didn't. Yeah, you could get to level these guys up or they gain experience or something. But yeah, it sounds like an incredible thing.
Well, I think when you pair this with, I mean, I know I'm jumping ahead in our list, but when you pair it with the fact that the size of the game might be smaller, like you actually might be able, you know, what do people insert in every single comment string? You know, never let this distract you from the fact that 10 years ago, an elite group of soldiers were imprisoned for a crime that it basically goes on to talk about. It's the A-team, right?
Yeah.
Which we can kind of do that, get that feeling, kill team, but it's still different. Maybe with the smaller games, you can collect a small force of something and then jump into this like narrative play with it and have persistent, you know, there used to be back in the day, 40K in 40 minutes, you know, built for people to play in their lunch hour.
Yeah.
You can have that kind of experience. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I think that's one of the things they have that I'm most excited about, especially for the diversity of the game. Next one was they just pretty much said we're just going to get a base increase in command points available.
Yeah. An increase, maybe, because it's everyone, like if you have a battle forged army, whatever that means, and you get X command points, and you don't have to be in a certain detachment or whatever, or you won't need to go out and get the loyal 32, the rusty 17, or whatever.
I think this, if I had to make an assumption, I think this would be a response to the command point system being an uneven mechanic army to army.
Yeah.
Like orcs live and die by their command points. Tau couldn't give a stuff. As long as they've got like 4 or 5 available to them, that's all they'll ever need.
Yeah.
But orcs, GSC, like Imperial Guard to some degree, these are the armies that if they don't have command points, their army just doesn't function at the same level as others.
Here. So you've got, first you have to be able to generate the command points. Your army, if you're playing a mono faction, you just have to be able to effectively field a double battalion or something like that. And not necessarily every army can really do that and still plan to compete on the base of their models. And then you've got to have good stratagems. So there's you have to have a book
of worthwhile stratagems to use. Now, I would say with Psychic and Awakening, I can say with some confidence that up until this point, I can't speak for future stuff, and now that we've seen essentially what Harlequins and Death Watch and things have got, every army has a handful of stratagems at a minimum that are worthwhile and are actually pretty ferociously good. Looking at some of the new Harlequin combinations, God, there's so much meat on the bone now, where there just wasn't before. So, but yeah, I am of the opinion that if they equal out and if they turn command points into an equal system where everyone essentially starts with the same amount.
Yeah, if you're mono faction, you start with 10 command points. I mean, I don't know what the number is, but as long as we're all starting with the same, I think that's all.
And then you can make your tactical choices. You're starting with a resource. You're not earning one, or you know, turning it on throughout the game or whatnot. So I'm a big
manipulating
fan.
the system to get the resource. That's
yes.
But look, I'm guilty of it too, man. Like I'm not. Please understand what I said is no judgment. It is zero judgment on what is. But that's not the way that everybody wants to play. It's not as satisfying as if like. I mean, I could easily see it. Like, I just want to play knights. I don't want to play knights and a few guard chumps. I'd love to play Chaos Space Marines, but I don't want to dip into just the cultist. And I don't want to feel like I'm somehow hamstrung if I don't pick Alpha Legion and take 60 cultists.
Damn straight.
You know what I mean?
So I always thought that supers never incentivized. You were never incentivized to take soup, but there was never any reason not to. You were never like, well, I could take this, or I could just take this obviously better option in every way for no downsides. But now there is going to be a downside. You're going to have to give something up. And I think just starting from that more purist standpoint, and I don't get me wrong, I think soup is still going to be the better way to go for the vast majority of people, but it's going to reward people and it's going to incentivize the people who like playing their mono factions. Yeah. Like I want to play mono Imperial Guard. I want to play mono Dark Angels. I want to play all these other things, but there was just no freaking reason to. Like Imperial Guard gets so much better when you add in a knight or a space marines or whatever. So there was really no reason not to do those things.
Yeah. And if the juice is worth the squeeze, you know, to where, okay, I want access to those other abilities and I have to sacrifice some of my starting CP to do it. That's probably a fairer way to go about doing it. Yeah, we don't know what the system's going to be. This again, we're talking off the same information that everyone else has, but it seems like it might. It's a different way to go about it. That's what they talk about, flipping the script, kind of. And I can get behind it if it works in this way that we kind of understand.
Yeah, me too. I like everything I'm seeing from that point of view. The next one, this is my favorite one. Tanks shoot in combat. Like, are you kidding? Yes, I am so keen for this. I have 13 Lehman Russes, and I'm gonna use all of them.
That is the worst. When you got your Lehmans, and they're they are cool. They're cool tanks. They got good rules, but then it's like, oh, sorry, I just touched you.
Yeah, touched you. See you, mate. Oh, yep. this Nurgling that you wouldn't have yawned at before.
Yeah, you were driven past. Yeah, it's any day of the week.
You wouldn't have even noticed it was there. It can't fit through the holes in your tank. It's not strong enough to break through the armor. So why do you care? You shouldn't. And I think that's what they're reflecting here. Yeah. You shouldn't care. I'm hoping there is a differentiation here of rules. Like I'm hoping like there is like if you're in combat with a knight, maybe you can't shoot your tank, or like a monster of some kind, something big enough to terrify the crap out of the guys inside. Maybe there is a point here, but maybe there's not. Maybe you just, hey, if your tank's in combat, I mean, you still get to shoot it.
Yeah, if my tank is being attacked by something vicious, I'm pulling the trigger. I'm pulling the cord the gun is.
You're more inclined to shoot. Like,
yeah,
it's so true, actually. You're much, if you're getting attacked by a mouse or a bear, are you going to use your shotgun? Which are you more likely to use your shotgun or not use your shotgun? Like, you know?
Yeah.
The bear, of course.
It seems to indicate, and look, we are truly picking apart the words, and it's hard to know whether or not these words were said specifically or where they were just written, you know, colorfully for the script. But you know, it does seem to indicate to me that you are able to fire at what you are locked in. It's not like you can ignore them. Like some of the super heavies have the ability to ignore what they're locked in combat with when they fire.
Yeah, and maybe the caveat will be you have to shoot what you're in combat with. Like, you know, so you can't just be like, oh, I'm wrapped by Nurglings. Well, I'm just going to keep shooting at that prime target across the board. Maybe, yeah. There's a lot of stuff they can do with this, and I like all of those options because all of them are better than what we had already.
That's
a great
point.
I hated it.
That's a great point. Like, no matter what, if there is anything that allows you to play with your toy, then it's better than it was.
Straight. Next one is one that I think everyone has wanted since the start of the edition, which is enhanced terrain rules. Now, they were specific on some of these cases in saying that you'll get bonuses when you're defending a building and someone's trying to assault you, or when you charge from out of line of sight, things like that. I love this. I absolutely adore it. I love it. It's something that I missed from previous editions, or from pretty much every edition from Warhammer up until this point, to varying degrees of love and hate. But this is one thing that was so obviously missing from this last edition that I'm so keen to see what they do with it.
I remember, I mean, this is one reason I was watching you play a game on a stream, and you had some scouts or whatever near a shipping container, and somebody goes to shoot at him, and the shipping container basically provided no benefit at all, and you just, you know, got no armor save and had to pull the models off the table.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rules, right? I mean, it's no big deal. That interaction was exactly right, but it still didn't feel right.
Nah.
You know, we get there, and like this whole business, like with how terrain is always interacted with vehicles, is kind of weird. Well, are you more than 25% obscured? Like, well, am I 24 or am I 27? We don't know.
And what specific cover save does this piece of terrain give? Is it a 6+5+4+? Is it -2 to charge you? Yeah,
and that's largely been taken away in this in the current edition, to where it's, you know, the only really certain things are actually grant you cover, kind of thing. But it's always been
rather than having some granularity to it, it's just been a switch that's either on or off. Like, terrain is either an on or off switch. You don't get to have half terrain. You don't get to have half anything. It's like there is terrain that makes a difference, and there's terrain that does not make a difference. And the only terrain that seems to really make a difference is ruins. So, yeah,
everything
that's
ruins.
Always been a shame.
We're going to call this ruins?
And, so therefore, ruins. Everything's ruins, because everyone, you want terrain that makes a difference, that makes an impact. You want some tactical choices. You want some nuance within your game system. But yeah, like you go to at LVO, I think there was maybe one non-ruins thing per table. Else was just, there was this ruin and this wall and this ruin and this ruin, and then there's another wall and then some barrels, which can also be ruins.
Which were, for the purposes of our conversation as players, is ruins.
Is ruins. Exactly right. Because you both want it to be ruins. You both want it to matter.
Yeah. So maybe we get to a point to where I'm not saying I want us to have a tome of terrain that we have to memorize all the different stuff. Like, it's very, you know, it's, I don't know what the best outcome is, but I hope that we get sensible terrain rules that make use of all, I mean, plus the plastic kits, you know, that they produce. You know, we all got a bunch of homegrown stuff that we've made over the years and stuff. You know, it would be great if it was, we often refer to, I guess, in like a sports term, the terrain is the 12th man. You know, it could be the third player on the table.
Yep.
And it should be. I think it actually should be. Not in a way that's imbalance to one player or the other, but it's basically a character in the story.
Yeah, I agree. It's a player in the game. Your two armies have come to this meeting place, or one army has sprung a trap on the other one, or you've come across here at this pivotal point for a reason, and I want that to be a meaningful reason in the battle that we have that ensues.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, your Drakari ambushed me in this place. Why? It was obviously some reason they did it, and I want that to be reflected when I feel like I'm fighting against something. Like, if the odds are stacked against me because, you know, there was a better tactical choice that happened in this setting, I want to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, so it's a great thing. What's next?
Every size of game is balanced. So I would assume they are referring that to, now this is a straight up assumption, which I'm sure we both love and loathe, but power level. I'm assuming they're referring to power level, because power level was, in a lot of ways, what we would have used to try and balance a game prior to, things that weren't tournament standard games, essentially like non-competitive games. And they specifically said games of every size are balanced. Does that mean they've put some effort into the power level system, or that means they've scrapped it and they're just going straight back to whatnots? But
see, look at the picture that they show during that. They say every size of game, well, that can mean point values. you know, 500 point, 1,000 point game or whatever, but it also shows different table sizes.
Oh, okay. Yep. So they're saying that they've regulated the size of tables. If you are at this size points level, you should be playing on this size table.
If you're playing on a 4x2, you're going to have a balanced experience because you use these rules set. If you're playing on a 3x5, which is, I think, like a standard coffee table size, kitchen table size, then you have these rules. If you're playing on a 4x6, here's your rule. I mean, complete speculation, but that's I think if you go down to just the pictures and then the use of size, that's likely what it's about.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice that the picture thing in there. So my head went straight to power level, because that's what I've always synonymated smaller games with. You want to play a smaller game? Yeah, how much power level you want to go for? Bada bing, bada boom, done.
It could be that maybe that's how. I mean, maybe that determines what table you play on.
Yeah, true.
If you go above all right. 50 power level, you're this.
Yeah,
automatically.
Exactly right. That would be another great way to kind of maybe mesh the size of the games in with the Crusader system.
I love this kind of thing because I think it gives, you know, if it pans out and it's fun, then it gives tournament organizers more flexibility to define what type of events they would like to run.
Indeed. Absolutely, indeed.
Or maybe what they have the capacity to run.
If you
just have the burning desire to run tournaments, and you determine that you have the physical resources, terrain, or space to run whatever the smallest size of game of match play is, maybe that opens up where you can do it now.
Yeah. Yep. Very good point. What was the next one? Reserves changed. So I suppose this, if I had to have a gut check, this is a response to the game getting so killy. I don't know how many times an episode I'll say this on a Forged Narrative, but the game is very killy. Lots of stuff dies. Lots of stuff dies very quickly. Yep. And the safest way to not have your stuff die is to not have it on the table, and therefore it can't be dead. So I think, their changes to reserve rules, maybe that means they've opened things up so you can put, you know, maybe for command points you can pay to keep things in reserve. That I think that would be a good fix. Hey, I've got this super killer unit that I don't need until turn 4, turn 5, but it has to hit turn 3, and they've got a really good an army that's really good at zoning me out until turn 3. I guess I'll smash some command points down or some other resource pay to keep them there.
Reserves used to be a mission rule. Like, if reserves was not on the list of things that you could do in a mission, you couldn't do it, even if you had you know, the ability to do it or whatever.
Like the old Dawn Attack scenarios and all sorts of other wacky stuff have been across. But yeah, no, that's cool. Like, maybe it's a specific thing. I think it sounded like they're giving it away more wholesale.
That's what it sounds like to me too. Like, it's just going to be something that people have the ability to do, which will be interesting to see how it interacts with the stratagems that allow people to do that, you know, for different things. But, you know,
because it's a very real thing that some armies play the reserve game a lot better than others.
Yeah. But this is an interesting thing because that's one of the levers that we've seen change a lot, even in the scope of this edition, is how do things come down and when do they come in? You know, and when do things drop into the game?
Like, you know, for a long time, what was it? It was GSC was they put in all these rules to make it so you had to be down. You couldn't drop turn one. You had to drop turn two or three. And then they gave, it was quite clearly worded to a lot of people that GSC could do it turns 4, 5, and 6 by paying stratagems, like returning to the shadows and things of that ilk. So, yeah, I'm quietly pretty damn keen to see what they do with this, because I think it's an exciting change for the game. And it could open up games that have a lot more longevity, like where the later turns of the game, you feel like they actually matter. Because I don't know about you, Paul, but I wouldn't want to speak for you, but I know from playing against Blood Angels players, a lot of the time they'll say, my game's decided by turn 3 pretty much every game, because either my reserves come down and our Wings of Fire and my Smash characters hit, or they don't.
Yeah, you're in the cleanup phase the last couple turns of the game.
Yeah,
at least you hope to be anyway.
But that would open up a lot of exciting stuff for the game to have, like turns 4, 5, and 6 become like the win or lose turns that they used to be in like days of old when we only had like Eternal War missions, and say like it was just are you on the objectives at the end of the game? Tick this box, yes or no. Well, but I do like how much more dynamic things are for us now.
I would love to see it being that risk versus reward situation, to where, you know, we play games with largely using progressive objectives. So to be on, you know, to score them, you have to be on the table and doing it.
And I absolutely prefer the progressive element, but I like one of the most favorite and I think the most enjoyable parts of the game for me is the little tactical choices when the chips are down and neither player has much left.
No, well, that's what I mean. Like, if you could roll in, we're just about Lehman's juicy. A second ago. If you can make a choice to roll in your Lehman's turn two or turn three, even if it's from your table edge, you might make that call. You might be sacrificing some stuff on the front end because of the way the game is played right now. But, you know, maybe you think you can make it up in the back end, and maybe that's the kind of choices you get to make. And that's a neat option to have.
Very true. All right. Next one was big guns. Essentially, I read this and I wrote this out as big guns hurt hordes more.
I don't know about it made... more. I think what I'm getting from this is that, you see, this again, we're picking them up, hanging on the actual words where it says the big guns get maximum hits. You know, that could just mean that anything that's a D6 roll just hits six based on the model size, the unit size. Yeah, if you're over 20 models. Yeah. You it's six hits.
Well, because you remember, like, a battle cannon had one shot that could, with its template, strength 8, AP 3, could hit one guy or it could hit 10 guys. But it was never 1-6, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it was never 1-6 shots. And so it's always been a kind of an uneven mechanic, because the D6 is so much so much more limiting than a template was, because a template is only limited by the amount of models the opponent has and the positioning of it. Like, it's... and whatnot, but a D6 only has six options on it, and so there's only so much granularity between those six numbers.
Yep.
And neither of them, a lot of the time when you're playing, let's say I'm playing I'm playing against what you said before, like 90 cultists. Yeah, one battle cannon shot. Okay, I roll a D6. It's one hit. Yeah, but that hit is still a massive, gigantic explosion, the size of what in my head looks like a large blast template. How does it only hit? And damage one dude.
Yeah, it's only one tank compute. Shell.
Right? Yeah, it's only one tank shell. I'm only firing, like, we don't fire explosive rounds anymore. You got to remove your disbelief. Like a demolisher cannon, this thing that's meant to just drop kick castles off the side of a build, like off the side of a planet, is essentially firing like solid shell, solid shot. Nothing is explosive anymore. At least like in the game terms, nothing. You get that many shots,
I'm
and it kills, yeah. Nothing shoots an explosive round anymore. Not even a bolter, which is, you know, a mass explosive whatever rounds. They only can damage one dude. So I've always wanted something to make them feel more juicy. And they've tried to do that. Things like the Lumbering Behemoth, where you get to shoot twice if you move under half, which has been something that's adopted by a wide range of assault tanks, battle tanks, across all the multiple factions. You know, Eldar's got it now. I think that that's a recognition that they needed something else as well, because there was like a Lehman Russ battle tank demolisher, whatever, whichever variant you want, should be good at killing hordes of Tyranids.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like it should be, you know,
yep,
but it's trash. It's actually trash at it. But yeah,
maybe so. Let's take a break. Then we'll come back and we'll jump into the rest of this list. See you in a minute.
No worries.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. It's still Adam and I here. And then right as I cut to break, he's like, Paul, we only have one more.
He cut and I'm like, yeah, dude, we're on like 8 of 9.
Well, we've been going at this, rapid fire. I love talking about this stuff, man. So
yeah,
caught up in it.
I don't take breaths very often. It's been noted. Like, people question my humanity. So the last one on this is flyers. Now, they specifically said flyers don't crash and burn when they run out of table. They go off the table and they come back on the table. What does that remind you of, Paul?
Oh, that's 5th edition flyer rules, right? I mean, the zooming and the stuff. What do you think the stance on this is? Because there's been a lot of discussion in this edition about deployment, and can you ever, like, there's actually nothing in the main rule book until I think we got the FAQ that said that the model had to be completely on the table.
Mm. Yeah, so you used to be able, as long as the base was on the table, you could have the wings overhanging or the guns, which made my life very easy playing Valkyries, because those things are friggin' massive.
They are.
And And then later when I started playing the Dark Angel Flyers as well, they don't have quite that problem, but they've still got a heftier wingspan. But yeah, then they made that ruling that every part of the model has to remain on the table, which makes a lot of sense. And that was a ruling that wasn't just made for flyers. That was for tanks as well, tank sponsons, all sorts of other stuff. But yeah, this sounds like so really the flyer rules we had this edition was the only time we've had flyer rules like this. They've always been what it sounds like they're going back to.
Yeah, I mean, to give more flexibility. I mean, I don't know that that's what's holding back a lot of flyers right now. Is just the ability to move, but the fact that we're going to see some rules overhauls, and you're able to get what is a more, narrative, but the theme can fit with what you expect, because it's like Eldar flyers with the double pivot is amazing and
incredible.
You get them doing, I mean, it makes them super super playable. Because they have good, I mean, they have good stats, right? But their movement rules make them a lot better.
Makes them actually, yeah.
Yeah.
They're the only flyer that can continually pivot across a single line.
Yeah.
Like you can fly them on a single line back and forth, thereby staying out of range of guns, staying out of range of assaults. Like they have so many like natural advantages. It's actually kind of almost not funny.
Yeah.
Simply buy that extra pivot. Now, when I think of flyers, when I narratively think of how I want flyers to work, I don't know about you, but I have like all war movies and like Indiana Jones in my head, where you hear the flyer coming, you hide for your life, it shoots a bunch of shots, and maybe it gets you, maybe it doesn't, and then you're good for another minute.
Yeah.
Get back up, and you're like, okay, mission's back on, guys. Who died in that strafing run? Johnny's still here. Barry's okay. He lost a leg. He'll be fine. And then you continue on your way. You know, those are what I remember from, you know, as a kid growing up. This is how planes work. Now, I think forever that was how they were until this edition, when they became this really binary thing where, do you have flyer rules that are good or not? And that was either determined by, you know, like an extra pivot, like you said, very relevant shooting, being really relevant points costs, like cheap flyers. And then on the last one being like, how many extra layers of rules do you get? E.g. like Iron Hands flyers, you know, yeah. Do you just have...
very fun. Of course, fun.
Of course you did. Yeah, yeah. And you ruined Dark Angels for everybody. It's fine.
Apologies.
You're not sorry.
No.
But yeah, like there was a lot of things that were just like, flyers just aren't good for me because, well, okay, Orc flyers, yeah? Apart from the Dacker Jet is apparently quite respectable, and now they've added a lot of rules in Psychic Awakening to make Burner Bombers more respectable as well. But man, there's the Mecha, I don't even know the bloody name of the damn thing.
It has seven different profiles, or seven different things you could build out of that kit, yeah.
And you never see all of them. Well, like, the only one I ever actually saw before Psychic Awakening was a Dacker Jet, and that was like twice. Yeah. But now Burner Bombers are apparently quite good. But that's what I mean. Like they're toughness 6 with a 4-up save. What was the? Why would you take those? And the same thing with the croissant, the death croissant. If it didn't, if the Doomscythe didn't have a crazy, really thematically awesome stratagem, are they worth taking?
Probably not. But I like the. I mean, we're talking about functionality of the flyer or whatever. But
yeah,
I think you can get tactical with it. I mean, with things that, you know, if it's about to die, you want to be on one side of the board and then maybe a turn later be on the other side of the board. I think this is, we're going to get options like that, which, you know, we just talked about the Eldar flyer being able to get exactly where you want it. Maybe you can kind of fake that, even if it's an every other turn kind of thing with the other flyers.
Mm. Yeah, very true.
Those are the 9 things that they wanted to point out to us.
Yeah, so that was the extent of them at this time. Now, I think there's a lot more than this going on, but I think this is just wetting our whistle, so to speak, because I fully expect the rules changes to be a lot more significant.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ticky-tack stuff that we currently employ in a lot of our games, or when, you know, and I don't want to say like gaming at a higher level, when you are being... hyper-competitive, you know, or trying to squeeze every little bit of value out of your moves, I think that stuff's going to be a little bit harder to do.
Mm, agreed.
I mean, which is fine. I mean, or at least doing it's fine. I think the way I phrased it may have seemed like it was like a negative thing, but there's like the movement phase is an incredibly critical part of this game because you can do so much. You can really weaponize it, the movement phase.
And 100%.
Yeah, and sometimes that just creates these weird, awkward situations, and I think some of that awkwardness is going to be peeled out of there.
They've been trying for a long time to make flyers work like they should. Like, and what I mean by that is we used to use flyers to zone off people, like to actually create like a flying barrier you couldn't move through, charge through, do anything through.
I'm immune to your charging, but you also do not have the physical inches to get where someplace that you'd like to be that I don't want you to be.
And at the same time, you can hit me with flamers. I'm sorry, what? So I'm close enough for you to hit me with a flamer, but I can't charge you and hit you with my sword. I can't, like, at so many levels, it didn't make sense, you know? At so many levels, it was just non-intuitive. And I think for a long time, they've been trying to get flyers right. And maybe they're just going to go back to the drawing board and be like, hey, let's just revert back to type, back to where it was in bygone ages, see how that sits. And then we'll revisit it and tweak it as we go. Because I don't think flyers were working particularly well. They never feel like flyers. They felt like a skimmer. It felt like a land speeder to me. They all just felt like land speeders.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I think that you were kind of hampered with the types of flyers that you were playing because of the models themselves.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. And maybe because right now, look, man, I love Valkyries. I love Valkyries. I love Vendettas.
Me too. But
there is no reason to take them.
No, 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 no.
I mean, there's basically reasons not to take the Vendetta.
There's so many. I've currently got the Scion's Code, the Psychic Guard, Psychic Awakening next to my toilet. And I was, as you do, I was reading up on the Scion stuff. And man, they are trying so hard to make you want to take a Valkyrie, and you still don't need. There's still no reason to take a Valkyrie.
Yeah.
Like they gave you so many stratagems, so many ways and means of getting buffs from them, just like. Nah, bruh. I'll just take more Scions, you know?
I mean, I legitimately love the feel of them, like the way the models look. I love the rules that they've had in past editions. Yeah, I've used them to drop and transport guardsmen. You know, it was just almost like a Swiss Army knife of things that you could use in a game. And now it's just like, this thing is just sitting around taking up space in my house. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to feel that way about my models.
Mm.
And I feel like even though I've never voiced it before, I think a lot of people probably feel that way, and it seems like that's going to be addressed.
I think so. Yep. Should we talk about some new models?
Which one do you want to talk about, man? Because teaser for this edition, where the Necrons come out blazing in the Sister of Battle. You know, the Necrons are laying down the Cadians. The Sister of Battle comes in, she helps save the day. She gets some goss on her. She goes and uses her miracle points or whatever and gets that goss, heals itself. Then she's battling against this, what is some kind of weird Necron thing. We don't know what that, what is that?
Giant is that? Tripod Necron immortal with a scythe is essentially what I've
scythe and into. A blaster or something. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, Necronites. I would like to point out a parallel here. If it's true that they're making, and it feels like it is, they're making Necron the big baddie in this one. Don't want to say this is a negative, but it could be construed both ways. Some people see this as positive, negative. It's very in line with what Age of Sigmar did in this last edition, where they had Nagash, essentially the undead, become the big bad guy straight after Chaos was the big bad guy.
You think
it's exactly what we just. This is exactly what we just had.
The 40K writers are copying the homework of the Sigmar writers, or anything?
I would say they're writing them exactly at the same time together, holding hands. I'd say it's one. I don't like to draw the parallels like that. I don't like thinking of this as just one narrative and they're copying each other, because it in my head it detracts from both. It's like it just makes it a bit less cool. It's just feel like we're doing something that's already been done. And I would say there is kind of a Bone Reaper-esque feel to some of the Necron models that are coming out, just by the size that they're going to and some of the constructs and things. And on top of that, the new Marines do feel like Kaul's just decided to open up a new Stormcast vault in his big ship full of different new armored stuff. Yeah, look, I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing, because the models are freaking amazing.
You are probably right to draw some of those parallels, but that doesn't make it bad. You know what I mean?
It does not make it bad. And do you know what? As long as the models are still good, I'm not going to be able to say it's bad or like all that troubling to me. As long as the models stay good and the rules are fun, I can deal with the fluff not being as good as it could be or the narrative not being as good as it could be. Because if I want world-class narrative, I pick up a Horus Heresy book. Unfortunately, the time for me wanting like top shelf stories from 40K is actually a couple editions ago, where I feel like that stopped for me. That's me personally.
I think the Necrons, it's going to get tied into some stuff with Mars. I'm willing to bet I think some deep lore is going to resurface from this and to be tied in. I think it's going to be real satisfying. I think. And I think that more importantly, the Necron players are getting, like, I've been just lit up today with excited Necron players.
I agree. I 100% am very, very, very happy Necrons are getting some love. When was the last time they got a new kit? A non-character new kit, sorry. That wasn't like a Kryptek with a new cape, because that's what they got last time.
Yeah, I don't even think they got new models in their Codex release this time.
No, they didn't. Unless it was the guy with the Canoptic cape.
Maybe they got a new Overlord or something.
Mm.
Maybe.
But yeah, like, and now it looks like they're getting a whole new range, like a literal whole new entire wave of releases. And I'm just going to say, I think I said on a couple of weeks ago, my most favorite iconic Necron model is the Monolith. And then it looks like they're getting a new Monolith, baby. And my God, does it look spectacular.
Yeah, this the stuff that we've seen looks, it does. It looks really amazing. There's such, you know, character and what the Necrons look. I mean, you've got, now this is part of their charm, right? Like you've got a bunch of warriors and they look a certain way, and the new warriors don't look that much different. I mean, we're getting some weapon options for them, and it's going to be neat to see if, like, are those weapon options squad upgrades, or is it, do you have to have all of one or all of the other and there's no mixing? Curious to see how that works out.
Cause it looks like there's a minimum of two different weapon options. So you just seem like there's a bolt rifle and an assault bolter option, ergo what they did with Primaris Marines, which makes sense. I mean, Necron Warriors deserve some options too. Come on. We can all get behind that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only question for me is can you mix it in the squad? You know, like, can you have...
Oh, yeah.
Is there, you know, like a heavy weapon type option or whatever, you know, for this? Is one guy... Do you have a Laz Plaz option for the Necron Warriors? Now, who knows? But just the you're going to have multiple kits to choose from, seemingly probably a lot of different ways to build the army. And that's like just Necron players that everyone I've spoken with today has just been overjoyed and really anxious to play with this stuff.
Well, it's not something they've ever had. Like, there's never been a depth of customization to them. It's like, okay, the only real options you had was were you going to Tesla or Gorse on your Immortals, and were you going Sword and Board or Warscythe on your Lich Guard?
Yeah.
And whatever the Triarch Praetorians get, which I have no idea what they get, because I haven't seen them on the board. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen them on the board, actually, if I ever played against them. But yeah, Lich Guard are sick, by the way. Still good models.
All right. No, they are great models. No, this is good times, man. This is, yeah. We don't have a date. We don't know when the next edition is coming out. We know that there are Psychic Awakening books that we need to still have in our hands, and we don't have them yet.
Well, there's two to go. We've got War of the Spider and Engine War, yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I don't know which... So, I thought I knew which one of those was coming first. I don't think I know which one of those is coming first anymore.
Nope. No idea.
Yeah, no idea anymore.
We might get them at the same time.
Yeah. I wouldn't say the waters have been muddied, but the way they've had to stall out their releases and their content drips during the COVID fun, some things may have not gotten muddled, but put in orders by necessity, if that makes sense.
Well, I mean, all of this stuff is in a pipeline, right? And the pipeline has been seriously constricted and constrained by everything that's going on in the world. And, you know, I'm sure, I mean, this is not probably the way they wanted to do it, I'm sure we should all have some of these Psychic Awakening books in our hands right now and be, you know, ready for this new stuff. But now, I think we'll become more aware of how designed they are to work in this new system, because we're going to get it kind of back to back.
Yep, that's right. And another thing is there's a lot of speculation about timelines. And so this weekend was supposed to be BAO, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, we were going to commentate. You know, we were going to get out there and do some more Stat Center stuff.
Yeah, that's right. The Ocho was going to rise again. But, of course, naturally, you know, Rona would pay to that. But over and above that, would this have been the release for that weekend? Is that what we're seeing here? This was the BAO release.
I don't know. I don't. I don't think there would have been a preview for that there. I don't. But I also don't know that this would have come in the Adepticon preview. I think if I were a betting man, with everything coming in the summer, I think I'm trying to think of when, like exactly what time we got the last edition. Like what month, the day, was it June or July?
I feel like it was July, but I can't say that with much confidence because, I've been wrong on many counts before.
But I mean,
I can't remember either.
Yeah.
Let's just enjoy the ride.
That's it. And you know, with the launch of the new site with the app, you know, there's a lot of speculation on what the app is going to do, but
They told us some functionality. They told us you were going to be able to write lists through it. And that just by itself sets me alight with delight. That a lot.
Yeah, if that's fantastic. Buy your codex, you're going to get an ability to download it into the app.
Yep. So I'm assuming we're going to start getting like a vacuum sealed little codes. Like you'd get a CD code with your when you buy your video games, you know?
Yep.
You'll get a CD code to put into your app and it'll automatically download your codex to your app. So I think that's cool. I always am a fan of paper, having a paper copy of my codex.
Yeah.
Because I love it. I love being able to look through a book. I love the fluff. I love the artwork. I just love having books. And I've got a whole wardrobe full of books I'll probably never need again, but I want to have, and I like owning still.
You own them.
I'm not one of these players who regrets buying books. I've never regretted a book purchase from GDub, like a codex.
The pain point that I think a lot of people have is that because we're in such a heavily documented FAQ'd edition, for good reason, right? I mean, I'd rather them continue to try to press the limit on rules and design, and then if we ever determine that there's an issue that needs some more clarification, that there's an avenue for it to happen, right? So it's good that we have that. But people complain that their books easily become out of date and they don't have a way of having it updated. But if we, if we do go to where you get the book, you can have it, you can own it, you can have that tactile feel. And then you also get the electronic copy that is then updated if there is ever a need. That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah, me too, mate. I have a pretty good friend of mine who plays Guard as well. And this is my best example of what can happen to people who buy books like in this current era. Like he bought the Guard Codex when it came out. And I don't know if anybody remembers what happened to the Guard Codex when it came out, but within 2 weeks, the points were changed on numerous units and the rules for conscripts were essentially rewritten. He felt that was a feel bad interaction. And I don't think he's bought a book since. And I think that is a good – if GDub wants to look at what they don't want to have happen, I think that's a good place to start. That feeling that gentleman got when he purchased that book, I think that's what they probably want to avoid with these changes, having the ability. And I know that in a lot of ways, the digital codexes get updated with points changes as they get changed in FAQs and things, which I think is stupendous. And I hope I hope is the direction they're going with. Yeah,
the app that you build your army is also easily updated. So
that's exactly what I was getting at. Yeah. That's my hopes. But I love it. Them putting out an app, I think, is been a long time coming.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. But it takes development. That's what I've always heard, that it takes development. It's a lean organization as far as like, you know, who's doing what and that kind of stuff. But I mean, you know, it is a long time coming. I'm glad it finally worked its way in. Well,
that's
dude,
right.
We're going to have, you know, of course, a lot more to talk about as we see more miniatures, as we see more concrete things about the rules. And man, this is going to be a fun ride.
We're just getting started, dude. This is going to be stupendously crazy, insane, amazing.
I mentioned that I would start reading the 5-star reviews that we get where I see them. And this one is probably one of the best that we've ever had.
Nice. Who's it by?
But a guy named, it's like a pseudonym, of course, but here's the review. 5 stars. Good stuff. It's good. It's free. I mean, come on.
That encapsulates it quite perfectly. I mean, Papa John's Pizza is over there, and their thing is like it's hot and it's ready or something?
Yep.
And it's like, but and then there's the memes are saying, but is it good? And they're like, it's hot and it's ready.
Yeah,
like, yeah, but does it taste nice? Well, it's hot and ready. I don't know what else to tell you, mate. Yeah.
Thank you, and also thanks to the folks who have indulged us on the Star Wars rant that we did a couple of weeks ago.
I actually went down better than I thought, so I'm pretty happy about that.
But we've got some requests from folks come in to talk about some things, and we will get to them. So things like Raven Guard, things like more Black Templars, Chaos Space Marines. This is going to be fun to talk about. And you know, I know we're going to still deal in the concept of what is now, like what you can be doing now and playing mm-hmm. with your stuff now. But all these things that people want to ask about, we'll take this as things as we move forward, as we start to know about what will be.
Exactly right.
Yeah, well, awesome, man. Well, Adam, thanks a lot for joining me. And yeah, let's talk again real soon.
Yeah, no problems, mate. Talk to you soon.
Have a good one.
Make my day.